know, our holidays are defined by traditions, those we keep, those we break. And nothing could be more traditional than a roast turkey on Thanksgiving. This year, nearly 250 million turkeys are being raised to satisfy American demand. But how traditional is the turkey? The fact is, we don't actually know. We know the first Thanksgiving included venison, thanks to the Wampanoag. They brought plenty. And the colonists shot some wildfowl, but they probably were not any sweet potatoes, and there was definitely not any cranberry sauce. Still, Thanksgiving didn't actually become a national holiday until Abraham Lincoln was in the White House, so maybe we should be looking for our traditions from the days of the 1860s. Jessica Harris can give us shed a little of enlightenment on the historical traditions of Thanksgiving. She's a food historian and author of High in the Hog, A Culinary Journey from Africa to America. Good morning, Jessica.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for joining us again. You know, let's talk about turkey and why this became a Thanksgiving tradition.
You want to talk turkey? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you know, turkey is a Native American bird in that sense. Certainly native to the hemisphere. And in fact, Ben Franklin wanted the turkey to be the national bird for just that reason. And he felt that the eagle was a predator and the turkey was a noble bird, although they're dumber than dirt.
That's true. That is so true. Turkey, I had a wild turkey a couple of years ago for Thanksgiving. It is totally different from the domesticated turkeys. Where did the domesticated tradition come from?
The turkey tradition seems to go back certainly as far as the declaration of Thanksgiving as a national holiday, and it may go back even beyond that. In the early Thanksgiving dinner recipes that you find, there is always a roast turkey as the centerpiece of the meal.
Although I'm told we're speaking with Jessica Harris, food historian, I read that at that time the colonist called every wildfowl a turkey. But let's move on from turkey to yams. I mean, sweet potatoes were probably not at that first Thanksgiving dinner. They weren't a staple of anybody's food menus at that point. Isn't that right?
No, they wouldn't have probably been at the first meals because, of course, sweet potatoes, although they're native to this hemisphere, are not from the northern ends of this hemisphere. But
you Southerners getting involved, that's the deal.
Well, yeah, a little bit, but it's not even that, because they're from really the southern reaches of the hemisphere, not the country.
Ah,
right.
There you go.
Right, there you go.
You know, they are the Ipomea boniata sort of genus and species, as opposed to the yam, which is something totally different, which most folks, unless they shop at an African market or a Hispanic market, probably have never even seen a true yam.
Or tasted one, for that matter.
Or tasted one.
And they do taste. There is a difference between a yam.
Oh, my goodness. It's night and day.
Absolutely.
Yams can be large. I think the Guinness Book of Record one weighed in at thousands of pounds.
Holy cow.
Yeah. They're big things. Mm-hmm. And you usually just get a piece of it. But there are also many different kinds of yams. Some of them are native to the African continent. Some of them are native to Asia. But there are lots of them. And they sometimes have a sort of brownish fibrous outside skin, slightly fibrous, and their flesh inside can be anything from pristine, you know, sort of crystalline almost,
right,
white, to mauve, purpley.
And they're worth it if you can find a yam. It's worth going out and trying it. You know, another thing they wouldn't have had on the menu is cranberry sauce, because sugar at that time was so ridiculously expensive. It's impossible to believe anybody had sugar to make cranberry sauce at that first Thanksgiving.
No, certainly not at the first one. Possibly at the first national one.
Right.
But
in the days of Lincoln.
Yeah, in the age of Lincoln. But the whole thing with sugar is sugar is a whole, you know, show in itself. It's it's so amazing in that it, when originally used, was used in Europe, certainly as medicine, and considered just that precious. It wasn't something that was considered something you would eat.
Right.
But the sugar had long become a part of the landscape by the time that Sarah Hale prevailed upon Lincoln to declare Thanksgiving a national holiday. Interesting note about her, she's also the lady who wrote Mary Had a Little Lamb.
No kidding.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. So
I didn't realize anybody actually wrote that. I thought it was anonymous. But, you know, can we at least say that the traditional Thanksgiving feast of stuffing, sweet potatoes, pumpkin pie, turkey, is that an American meal?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it seems to go back to certainly to that 1863. If there are stories in Godey's Lady's book that talk about the meal, they even mention actually cranberry tarts. There are lots of pies. People loved pies for dessert. The interesting thing also is that, of course, at that point in time, the nation was at war.
Exactly. Mm. You know, Jessica Harris, food historian and author of High on the Hog, one of my favorite books, Culinary Journey from Africa to America.
You bless you.
It's a great book, and the stories I think about whenever I put some recipes together with some of the ingredients from your book. But you have spent a lot of time outside of the United States. How recognizable is Thanksgiving from the perspective of people overseas?
Oh, my Lord, not really. Eons ago, if it were television, you would know just how many eons, but did a junior year abroad in France, in Paris, and wanted to cook a Thanksgiving meal for my French family. Well, let me tell you, it was a haul and a trek.
trying to get the ingredients, you
absolutely.
Mean.
And then trying to figure out the vocabulary because I was, you know, sort of still perfecting my French, as it were. But turkeys were available at Christmas, not in November.
I bet.
Corn was something that the French, you know, who do that wonderful, and I adore the French, but they sometimes will shake their heads and sort of jowls go back and forth. Oh, no, 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 no. On donne ça au cochon. We give that to the pigs.
For the pigs.
We give that to the pigs.
You know, let me ask you, last question for you. Let's settle the long-standing Thanksgiving debate. Which do you put on your table for the holiday? Sweet potato pie or pumpkin pie?
Oh, honey. I think my mother alternated. I think there's also a north-south divide.
Yeah.
Sweet potato more in the south, pumpkin more in the north, and I think there may be a racial divide. I think a lot more black folks are eating sweet potato pie.
Well, you can always resolve it by doing both.
That was it.
Absolutely.
But you got to have mincemeat pie, which goes back with the traditions. I mean, I love mincemeat pie.
I do,
it was
too.
My favorite.
It's harder to get these days.
I know.
Mincemeat, you don't see much, but there'll be a lot of pumpkin pie consumed
tomorrow. A lot of pumpkins
tomorrow.
Have died for our Thanksgiving.
Jessica Harris, food historian, author of High on the Hog, A Culinary Journey from Africa to America. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Have a great Thanksgiving, Jessica.
Gobble, gobble, gobble. Happy Thanksgiving.
Give us your view on anything you hear on the show. Post comments to thetakeaway.org. Share your Thanksgiving stories as everyone prepares for the holiday. We want to hear what you're thankful for. A listener from Oklahoma texted us this: I will be working at my part-time job after working at my full-time job overnight. This only gives me 11 hours between both jobs on Thanksgiving Day. I am thankful for the 52 hours a week, but also tired. I'm going to share that feeling tomorrow. You can text us with your comments. Send the word take, followed by your response to 69866. Gobble, gobble. I'm John Huckenberry.
And I'm Celeste Headlee. Have a great Thanksgiving. This is The Takeaway.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.